This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 13th, 2019. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from the Pacific Rim, the Pacific Northwest, and the Breaker.News. The Big Deal feature, remembering the legendary newspaper columnist and author Jim Taylor. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those who deserve it. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or do we focus way too much on housing when it comes to evaluating Gregor Robertson's empty legacy? Robertson took the easy way out of the mayor's office. Instead of being defeated in the October 2018 Vancouver civic election, he announced in January 2018 that he would not run for a fourth term. Polling said that he dropped the ball on housing. His 2008 promise to end street homelessness by 2015 was merely aspirational. Homelessness actually increased under Robertson, while luxury towers sold to wealthy from China mushroomed. They were built by big money donors to Robertson's Vision Vancouver party. Robertson showed no real passion for taking a bite out of crime. He was the police board chair, but he allowed marijuana stores to proliferate before the federal laws changed. In 2011, his foster son, Janish Navas Rivas, was arrested and charged for being part of a guns and drugs gang. Navas Rivas served his time in jail and remained part of the Robertson clan. His brother, however, was killed by a hitman in summer 2018. And now we find out that Matthew Navas Rivas was the target of a hitman on January 13, 2018. That hitman was killed, so was an innocent 15-year-old, Alfred Wong. He was murdered by a stray bullet that January Saturday night, and the crime is still unsolved. 2 weeks after that incident, Matthew Navas Rivas was charged with 39 gun offenses after the Vancouver Police Department's Project Tactic. But will we ever find out if he was under police surveillance on the night of January 13, 2018? Matthew Navas Rivas had a rap sheet that included a home invasion, and he was even banned from guns for 10 years. Vancouver police are working hard to solve this crime, but we can only hope they have more support under new Mayor Kennedy Stewart than they did under Gregor Robertson. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Stephen Chen reports, the Chinese technology helping New York police keep a closer eye on the United States' biggest city. New York City's police department is monitoring systems using cameras and facial recognition software developed in China. The surveillance tools are identical to those used in Skynet in China, the largest video surveillance system on Earth. Hikvision, which is the world's largest surveillance technology company and based in Hangzhou in eastern China, has supplied the equipment and software used by an American force that polices a population of about 8.6 million people. The Skynet program, now renamed Pingyan Changshi, or Safe Cities, claimed to have connected 170 million cameras across China last year. By 2020, another 400 million units will be installed. It said, casting a watchful eye on every two citizens. Beijing plans to be able to identify anyone, anytime, anywhere in China within 3 seconds. One American community where the Skynet technology has been rolled out is River Park Towers in the Bronx, the northernmost of New York's 5 boroughs. On Channel News Asia, we had a free exchange of views, PM Mahathir, after meeting Johor Sultan. Dr. Mahathir had an audience with Sultan Ibrahim Sultan Iskandar on January 10th at the Johor Ruler's Residence in Malaysia, called Istana Bukit Serene in Johor Bahru. It was their first meeting in almost 20 years. Dr. Mahathir said the last time he met Sultan Ibrahim Iskandar was when he stepped down as Malaysia's 4th Prime Minister in 2003. When asked if the subject of electing the next Malaysian king was discussed, Dr. Mahathir said it was a matter for the Malaysian sultans and that the issue had nothing to do with him. Malaysia's Conference of Rulers is due to elect a new king on January 24th after Sultan Mohammed V stepped down. After their meeting, Dr. Mahathir was personally driven to Senai International Airport by the Sultan of Johor in a blue classic Proton Saga car with the number plate Proton 1. The 34-year-old vehicle was a gift to Sultan Ibrahim's father, then King Sultan Iskandar, by the federal government headed by Mahathir back in 1985. And on ABC News Australia, Patrick Williams reports, carpet python riddled with 500 ticks slinks into pool to try to drown them. Tony Harrison from Gold Coast and Brisbane Snake Catcher was called out to retrieve the reptile from a property at Coolangatta on January 10th. Mr. Harrison live-streamed the call out to his Facebook page, capturing the moment he first spotted the tick-riddled snake. The python, which has since been named Nike, was taken to Currumbin Wildlife Hospital for treatment. It took vets hours to remove and count the 511 ticks. University of Queensland professor of parasitology Stephen Barker said the ticks attached to the python were known as reptile ticks. Quote, "For a male tick, this is a disco or nightclub. They're there waiting for females to attach and feed. Once she's fed, she releases a pheromone that says, 'I'm here,' and then the males will detach and they'll go and mate with the female." That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines from around the Pacific Northwest. In the Tacoma News Tribune, Shauna Sowersby reports, Governor Inslee says he's focused on the state as speculation swirls about presidential bid. Amid speculation that he'll run for president, Governor Jay Inslee laid out his goals January 10th for the upcoming Washington legislative session, which starts its run January 14th. Inslee, a Democrat, said he was optimistic that issues such as early childhood development and behavioral health reforms will have full support from both sides of the aisle. Inslee might find some of his other proposals, including a controversial capital gains tax, having difficulty passing the legislature. There are concerns among some that Inslee's focus won't be on Washington, but on a presidential bid, should he decide to pursue one. Inslee shrugged off critics who say his policy proposals were meant to appeal to a national audience. Quote, "Those are issues that I've had deep in my heart for 30 years," he said. In the Oregonian, Gordon Friedman reports, Mayor Ted Wheeler orders Portland police to give victims of crime reports for free. Mayor Ted Wheeler has ordered the Portland Police Bureau to release copies of police reports to crime victims free of charge, following through on a promise to do so. Wheeler had made the commitment in December in response to a series published by the Oregonian that was called On Hold. The reports shed light on the long waits and high fees that people, even crime victims, often faced when trying to get police reports and the consequences of those delays. For example, in 2017, it took the Portland police an average of 133 days to release a police report. Seattle, by contrast, provides most reports in less than a week. Seattle charges about $1 per report and waives fees for victims. Portland charges $30 and up, plus additional copying costs. And in the Powell River Peak, David Brindle reports salmon kill a huge loss to hatchery in Powell River. Powell River Salmon Society discovered a huge loss at its Duck Lake hatchery. At some time over the last weekend of 2018, someone tampered with valves that measure the flow of water, resulting in the death of approximately 700,000 chum salmon elephants. According to PRSS President Ed Oldfield, the situation has created a huge obstacle, and the Society is working on a practical solution, including advanced security at the Duck Lake hatchery with locks, cameras, and fencing. Quote, "We can't bring those fish back. In all likelihood, it will maybe take 4 cycles or 5 cycles of that year before we're back to decent numbers," said Oldfield. Quote, "That's 20 to 25 years of work, because they come back every 4 years, and hopefully every 4 years we're able to increase the numbers," end quote. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. On January 7th, it was 30 the end of the story of the life of Jim Taylor. The author and newspaper columnist died at his home in Shawinigan Lake on Vancouver Island. He was 82. He was a friend and mentor to many. Taylor wrote 7,500 columns for the Victoria Times Colonist, Vancouver Sun, Vancouver Province, and Sun Media. He also wrote 16 books in his career, including memoirs of Wayne Gretzky, Rick Hansen, Bob Lenarduzzi, and Jim Young. Taylor didn't really think of himself as a sports writer, but a writer whose subjects were in the world of sports. His mission was to inform and to entertain, to put a smile on faces. Here is a 2010 interview that Jim Taylor did with Fred Causey for the Jack Webster Foundation.
Sports, you don't know who's going to win. You don't know how much time's going to be left. You don't know what's going to happen. I did the Mike Tyson Holyfield fight where Tyson bit his ears and somebody knocked something over in the casino. It sounded like a gun, and suddenly about every fourth guy in the crowd seemed to have a gun. And there was a riot up front. A little girl was holding up a piece of ear, trying to hand it to the referee, and I had 11 minutes. But I did it.
Greg Douglas, a fellow member of the BC Sports Hall of Fame, was a close friend of and a collaborator with Jim Taylor on radio and TV and in newspapers. I asked Greg what defined Jim Taylor.
Well, I think that can be wrapped up in one short word, Bob, and that word would be wit. He expressed his wit through the electronic media, the print media. One in a thousand, one in a million, really, because he just had that gift where he didn't take himself too seriously. He didn't take the athletes that he covered too seriously. He just had a lot of fun doing what he did. He's the first to admit he never played any sports. He was not athletically inclined when he was a young teenager in Victoria. But he got into the sports writing gig almost by accident, and it just turned into a wonderful, wonderful career for him.
More from Jim Taylor in 2010.
And of course, in sports, I mean, there's so much to laugh at. Because Latrell Sprewell, basketball player, otherwise would be washing giraffes, you know, turns down $84 million over 11 years and says, I have to think of my family. Now, how can you not? How can you not laugh? You know, there was a time when the Canucks were going quite badly, and I kind of poke fun at him a little bit, say, it's minor hockey week in Canada. Take a Canuck to lunch. You know, and people got upset, but they laughed.
Greg Douglas.
Back in the day, you know, in the 60s and 70s, when the Vancouver sports teams weren't doing that well, I'm thinking specifically of the Canucks, you could always have a smile on your face reading his game reports the next morning, because he could see the humor in it all and never took it all so seriously as they do today, for instance.
Here is Jim Taylor with a commentary from 1990 about the BC Lions during his KVOS TV show with Greg Douglas.
In the last episode of our gripping gridiron melodrama, President Joe Capp had just traded away Vancouver Island for beads and trinkets, and Coach Larry Kerharic was contemplating the single-wing offense because it requires no quarterback. Yes, it's As the Lions Turn, the story that asks the question, is Major Harris a private person? Is Doug Flutie taller than Sneezy, Doc, Grumpy, and Dopey? And will the offense break down with Ricky Foggy at quarterback, or will the quarterback be Ricky Skaggs, who can play the Foggy Mountain Breakdown? As the Lions Turn, coming soon to a stadium near you.
BC NDP Health Minister Adrian Dix first knew Jim Taylor as his childhood soccer coach. Taylor was also a client at the Kerrisdale Insurance Agency owned by Dix's parents. Adrian and his late father, Ken Dix, had a tradition of giving each other a book for Christmas. The last time, in 2012, was when Adrian received a copy of Jim Taylor's Hello, Sweetheart, Give Me a Rewrite.
He was one of the coaches on our soccer team, and his son, Chris, was on the team, and Chris and I were friends at that time. He just ended up going to a different school and stuff, so I didn't know him in high school, but I knew him then. And Jim was a great coach. He was a lot of fun. We were at the lowest possible skill level of teams, and the coaches and we were definitely kick and chase soccer team. And Jim was just fun. He had a great way of communicating to kids. I remember this because he was kind of famous, you know. So, but he didn't act that way. He had a great way of communicating with kids. He was, as everybody who knows him know, just hilarious. But he didn't need to be sort of a cynical sports guy to be funny. He was funny with kids too. He was just my experience of him was genuinely kind-hearted.
Greg Douglas.
I remember one time there was a media slash business relations conference going on when Denny Boyd and Jim were on the media side of the table, and across from the table were the likes of Nelson Scalbania and Peter Pocklington. And Denny Boyd opened the session by saying, "Okay, you guys have tons of money, big cars, fancy homes, but we in the media have our integrity." Things were pretty tense, and then Jim come out with, "Anybody want to trade?" And that sort of broke the ice, and then from there on, everything went well. But that was the way he operated. He just could see the humor in everything and expressed it that way. My favorite story about him is he did not like baseball. He thought baseball was the most boring pastime in the world. He said he'd rather play Scrabble than watch a baseball game. So when we did work together on that newspaper, the Weekly Sports Only, I literally dragged him out to Nat Bailey Stadium. I wanted him to meet Rocky Bridges, who was the manager of the Canadians at that time in the Coast League. And those who may remember Rocky, he forever had a big wad of chewing tobacco in his jaw. And hours before the ball game that afternoon, I introduced them, and I was hoping that Jim would be on his best behavior. And Rocky sensed right away that he wasn't a baseball fan. And I can't recall the first question that Jim asked of him, but it was sarcastic. And without missing a beat, Rocky Bridges come up with this great big wad of chewing tobacco that he spit out, landed right on the toe of Jim's shoe, and that ended the interview, and he never did write the story. So he never wrote a baseball story, to my knowledge.
Adrian Dix.
Looking back at it, because I've been reading some of the old columns from his most recent book this week, I think as a sports writer, Bob, he was as good as any of the people writing columns anywhere. You know, the Jim Murrays and the Rick Rileys and even Bill Simmons in a different way today. Like, those guys are excellent writers, but Jim was as good as them. His columns always had a beginning and an end. And not only were they funny, but they were well thought through. I think a lot of modern sort of sports writing is in point form these days. Jim wrote many essays, and they were great and readable and connected with people. And because I knew him, I always read him. And my mom and dad and everyone did in our household as well.
Greg Douglas.
A lot of people are bemoaning the fact that they lost him, and they're asking about a service and a celebration of life. Jim's in a better place right now, because I used to talk to him on a weekly basis. We had a Friday afternoon call that he would make to me or I would make to him. And the last time I talked to him, just before Christmas, he said, "I want this over with. I've had enough. I want this over with." He was a severe diabetic for many, many years. But in recent years, he went through some spinal issues. And then real recently, he had a lung infection. And that was the final straw, and he knew it. And his ashes were spread by his son Chris, alongside Jim's wife Deb, who died 2 years ago at Christmas time. And like I say, he's in a better place, because he was really in pain, and it was difficult to see that happen to a guy of his stature.
In 2010, Jim Taylor was presented with the Bruce Hutcheson Lifetime Achievement Award at the Jack Webster Awards Dinner, the annual recognition of the best of British Columbia journalism. Taylor was humbled to be honored by his peers. He told me then that it was the pinnacle of his career. It was like winning an Oscar. Here is Jim Taylor's acceptance speech at the Jack Webster Awards from November 1st, 2010 at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Vancouver.
Thank you very much. I want to start off by thanking the selection committee, but first thank you to Fred Causey for doing the video and stealing all the stuff I was going to use just a minute ago. But before we start, thank you very much to the selection committee, but just to be clear as to what you've done. You have given this award to a journalist who, at age 20, having learned that if you wrote a record column, they send you free records, was writing a pop music column for the Victoria Columnist at that time. And a new record came out, and I trashed it, and I said that within a year, no one would remember the singer's name. The song was Heartbreak Hotel. The singer was Elvis Presley. The Louis Pasaglia incident, yes, I went there in 76, and 1976, to the Lions camp, and of course, knowing as much football as I did, which was not nearly as much as I thought, Louis missed a couple of kicks. So I wrote, said, you know, they've got to find somebody. This kid ain't going to hack it. Louis, from time to time, reminds me of this because I was right. 25 years later, he had to quit. The Pigs Will Fly Before Russians Play in the National Hockey League. I wrote a book with Igor Larionov, and he reminded me of that, too. But I think more than anything, you should be aware, you on the selection committee, that I probably hold the freestyle brain freeze record for any journalist of any profession. As it was pointed out, I was covering high school sport. My very first assignment was to cover a high school soccer game. My mother, knowing that I was going to be a writer or wanted to be, had somehow found the money to buy me a beat-up old second or third-hand Underwood typewriter. I covered the game and went back to home to write my story. And I swear this is true. For some reason, and I've never figured it out, I very carefully measured the width of a newspaper column on the sports page and set the margins of my typewriter to that width and wrote my story. As I recall, there were a lot of hyphens. I took it to the sports editor at The Columnist, a man named Jim Tang, and I swear, if he had laughed, I would have run out and never returned and probably had to resort to the other professions for which I was probably suited, you know, sandwich boards for break alignment specials, and sentences that ended, "Do you want fries with that?" But he didn't laugh, and things got better. And I, as I say, I've been so lucky. The jobs came, the people let me write. But there's one thing that I'm a little concerned about. It's the lifetime part. I hope that there are more words for me to write. I hope that there are people who want to read them. But if it turns out that I can't, that this is really the lifetime, then I can't think of a better way to write one last 30 than with this award. Thank you very much.
That was the late Jim Taylor accepting the Lifetime Achievement Award at the Jack Webster Awards in Vancouver on November 1st, 2010. Find out more about Jim Taylor's books. Go to harborpublishing.com. Audio clips courtesy of Eric Stansfield, KBOS-TV, and the Jack Webster Foundation. Now it's time for the virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people who make a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Surrey Police Department in England and the Surrey RCMP in British Columbia. On Christmas Day, police 7,600 kilometers apart combined to save the life of a woman in distress. The woman in Surrey, BC, errantly contacted the Surrey police in England via social media. They quickly contacted Canadian police, and the Surrey RCMP reached the woman before she could do harm to herself. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Go to sprucehill.ca for more information. Well, that's it for the Breaker.news podcast for the week of January 13th, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on January 13th in 1849, the colony of Vancouver Island was declared? It was then leased for a decade to the Hudson's Bay Company. In 1866, Vancouver Island and the mainland united as the colony of British Columbia, and they both entered Canadian Confederation in 1871. Vancouver Island was originally home of the Coast Salish, Newchalnuth, and Kwakiutl people. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.